Okay, well, starting the recording a little bit late here, but okay, QR factorizations, automate transformation orthonormal basis, symmetric matrices, the matrix is untransposed, which is equivalent to being a sine scale change in some orthonormal base, reflections is a special case, and to be a positive definite matrix means that what the matrix does to a vector is. Well, it may change the magnitude and the direction of the vector, but as long as the vector is not the zero vector, when you take the dot product of the original vector with the transformed vector, you will get a positive number, meaning it doesn't change the direction by an angle of 90 degrees or bigger. So whatever change is made to the direction of the vector, it's a change of less than 90 degrees. There'll always be an acute angle between V and the transformed vector V. So less than pi over 2 radians. And this is equivalent to being not a sine scale change, but more particularly an actual scale change. So it changes the scales by positive multiples. Now, the catch here is it may not be a scale change in the standard basis. Okay. But there is some basis of Euclidean space where this is a scale change. Now, one thing here is that for this dot product to even make sense at all, A cannot change the dimension of V. So if V is n-dimensional, AV also needs to be n-dimensional for this to make sense. So these should, V and AV should both be in Rn for the same Rn, the same Euclidean space. So A has to be a square matrix, n by n, in order to not change the dimension of the space in which V lives after the transformation. And so when you're thinking about stuff like this with this geometric significance, especially this one, the symmetric matrices, and as I said earlier, if you need this for linear regressions too, you want to have a nice base. An orthogonal base is good enough for linear regression, for doing geometry of angles and so on. You need extra. It needs to be not just orthogonal, but orthonormal. Remember, there's a basis. It's something that spans your vector space without any redundancy. For n-dimensional Euclidean space, it takes n vectors to span the whole space. And if you have more than n, then there's some kind of redundancy. And you could eliminate some and still span the whole space. Having n vectors alone is not a guarantee that you span everything, because you might have all your vectors lying along a line. Or in 3D, you might have all your vectors lying in one plane. Even 100 vectors, if they're all in one plane, won't span all of 3D space. But if you have some vectors that do span the whole space, then you only need n of them to do it. You can throw away some extras. And so in a particular case where you know the dimensions n, because you're in n dimensional Euclidean space, you just say, okay, do I span everything? And do I have the right number of vectors? That automatically ensures there's no redundancy. And let's remember what orthogonal basis means. So that just means it's a basis, but also the dot products are zero. And interestingly, if the vectors make right angles with each other, so the dot products are zero, and you have n of them, that will actually force you to not do things like put all your vectors in the same plane in three-dimensional space. It'll force you to spread out their directions more so that you actually will span, assuming you have enough vectors. So, let's see. Instead of writing n vectors, let's write the symbols. Okay, so n vectors in Rn, call them v1 to vn, and now if you take the dot product of any two different vectors, it needs to be zero. That's what we mean by the vectors having a right angle with each other, which in two and three dimensions matches our geometric definition of that. Remember, we introduced orthonormal bases last time on Monday. So for doing geometry, there's a difference between a circle and an ellipse, between a rectangle and a square. You want to have the angles computed correctly to match what you see in the real world. Well, then you have to use the same length scales for x axis, y axis, and z axis. Otherwise, the angles will look wrong. Like if you see a movie where they tried to convert the widescreen into just a less wide size. One way to do the conversion is to chop off the edges. Sometimes people they try to change the scales, the x scale and the y scale, to make it fit in a different shape. But that distorts stuff. I've seen it where people in these converted videos look too tall and skinny because of that kind of thing. So to not have that problem, you want n vectors where not only are the dot products for different vectors zero, but the magnitudes of the vectors are all the same. And once you agree that the magnitude should all be the same, then you might as well pick a convenient number. So how about they all have magnitude 1, which would make their dot product, each self dot product, 1 squared, or just 1. Now, I guess I did leave off one annoying detail with the second one there, the orthogonal basis. Technically, that's not quite enough because I suppose in this orthogonal basis list, you could have a zero vector in there. And then you wouldn't have span all of our n. Don't put any zero vectors in your list. Okay. So with that little correction there, bring this back up to speed from last time. And so at least twice now I gave you this procedure for some homework problems. The last two homeworks I gave you this procedure. Take one basis, convert it to, and orthonormal basis. And it's kind of a long, drawn-out procedure, right? QR factorization automates this. First vector and leave it alone, then you start with the first vector and leave it alone, and then for the next vector you have to take away the part of it parallel to the first vector. Then for the third vector you take the third. For the third new vector, you're going to take the third old vector and take away the parts of it that are parallel to either of the first two new vectors. And then for the fourth one, you'd have to take away parts that are parallel to the first three vectors, and eventually you get to the last one, right? And you have to take away the stuff that is parallel to any of the earlier vectors that you've been building up for the new basis. To make sure that what's left over will be perpendicular to all the other stuff in your new basis. And this gets you an orthogonal basis. It's not quite orthonormal yet. So we need a little bit more. We just divide out the magnitudes. Now all the vectors, the v's here, will have magnitude 1. So two-step process. First, I convert the u's to these w's, which are all at right angles of each other, and then I bring the magnitudes to 1. Okay. Here's what QR does. I enter this in my calculator. On my calculator, at least, I type the QR command. Then I type a matrix, which could be stored in a variable, or I can just type it in directly. And then I have to do comma, a variable name that'll store the Q factor, and then comma, another variable name where the calculator will store the R factor. Okay, so your calculator may go slightly different than mine. Then I'll pass it around. I did one right here. There's how the command looks, and you can scroll up and see some of the
related stuff I did with it.
Okay. So with this setup, what the calculator is doing is it's thinking in terms of matrices. So we have some matrix, I'll call it A, where the columns are your starting basis. And this is a factorization, so the calculator computes these other two matrices, Q and R, and what are Q and R? Okay, well, Q will be exactly what you want. It'll be the orthonormal basis you want. Okay? You just read it off from the columns. And it'll exactly match what you get if you do the manual procedure. Okay? So basically, the calculator automates that procedure. And the R matrix basically encodes all of the work that gets done here, all the dot products you have to compute to do all these projections and then divide out magnitudes, that R encodes the transition, so to speak, between the old and the new basis. It encodes all the work that gets done when you do it manually. Now, you have to do a little bit of extra work to get back to get exact like coefficients that you need for say linear regression, you have to work a slightly harder. But I can tell you how to recover it. So notice since this matrix is made up of an orthonormal basis, that means that the matrix is what we somewhat confusingly call orthogonal. Okay. So its transpose will be its inverse. So the inverse is very easy to find. Just turn the columns into rows. So I guess Q inverse equals Q transpose, which would just be the matrix with all the columns turned into rows. So this can really speed things up. Now you can do the conversion. Automate it. And so I said the R encodes the transition. So we can make that a little bit more precise now. Okay. So let's say you want the transformation T, the linear one, of course. Let's say you want to be able to transform things. Say you had something that was in your starting basis. Maybe you had some vector given in terms of the orthonormal coordinates. Right? So let's say we're just doing a coordinate chain. Right? So this is what comes up in linear regression. You'll figure things out in terms of the orthonormal basis. But then what you want is to recover something that's more meaningful in the real world, that'll be the basis you started with. And so you'll need to be able to transform something that has a bunch of coefficients in front of the orthonormal basis something that has a bunch of coefficients in front of your starting basis. So what is this? How can we? Well, I don't know if I should say is or so much as a has matrix, has the following matrix. Okay? Okay, so think back to what was our formula for change of basis? We had this formula for how to do a change of basis thing, right? For any transformation. Something like, something involving a B and an H and an A. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, wait, I don't think we'll see right.
I've got it in my notes too. It's B-H-A-N. Yep. Back on day 21. Basis, which in this case we'll have with vectors and complements A. The way this works is write it down. It's in terms of the transformation you're going from Rn with the identity map, but starting with the V's basis. Okay. Now the Q matrix, right? You actually take some vector, just write it the usual way, in the standard with using the standard basis, multiplying by the vector by Q actually is going to take you into the start with something in the standard basis, you multiply it by the matrix, you get a bunch of coefficients in front of these. And so that actually is taking you from V coordinates to standard coordinates. You actually need to do the inverse.
this one right here. Clearly, I got it mixed up. So I apologize for that.
If you're in the V coordinates, then you have something like 3V1 plus 4V2. Right? That just looks like a 3-4. You multiply it by the Q matrix. That puts you in. That will give you 3V1 plus 4V2. That kind of thing. That would be back in the standard basis. Then we go to the U basis. And so the matrix for that would be A inverse. And so the transformation will be, if you write it in matrix multiplication order, it looks like this. Because you multiply by a vector on the right. So first you apply Q to a vector, then you apply A inverse to a vector. Okay. So this is usually the transformation you want, say you're doing a linear regression problem. And it's possible to do a little bit of a... You can rewrite this in terms of the Q and the R if you want, so it's not strictly necessary. So... It's very nice. So that's the sense in which the R matrix encodes the transformation between these bases. If you have something in terms of the V coordinates, then you get something back out in terms of the U coordinates here. I need to explain about why that inverse looks the way it does. Multiplication is kind of different, right? A times B is not the same as B times A in the general matrices, right? The products might even have A, B, and BA might even be matrices of different sizes, right? And even when they're square matrices, AB can still be different than BA. So I think division is probably not a good word for it, because are we dividing on the left or on the right, so to speak? I guess how we call this, maybe we could call it left division by A.
But you would
think, yeah, okay, why not
the other way around,
right?
Hold on, I'm missing,
there's a little typo there, it's supposed to be R inverse. I've lost the inverse there. R inverse. That's why you were getting confused. But somehow I lost the inverse. Yeah. Okay. If you want to go the other way, if you want to start in the input basis and then go to the output basis, if you want to start with your U basis, and you have something in those coordinates, and then you want to transform them to the orthonormal basis, V's, then you just go the other way around, with R.
Okay. Yeah, now it looks like the division makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then you use matrix R. Because you want to go the other way around. So to undo an R inverse, just do R. So in that sense, R encodes the transformation from old basis to new basis. Okay. To go from the old coordinate system to your new orthonormal coordinate system, you just have to multiply by R. So, I was thinking back to homework 12, which was done in 23-dimensional space, right? Data series is a list of 23 numbers. Okay, and then we have what I call vector 1, right? Which is just a bunch of 1s, 23 ones. And we had a bunch of years. They corresponded to census years, so they incremented by 10. Data from 23 censuses. And then we had what I call this y squared vector, which was just the square of the years. Right? All right, fine. This is only three vectors, though. So, I mean, these three vectors. So they don't form a basis for R23. You need 23 vectors for that. But that shouldn't be a problem. You could just fill it in. As long as you pick stuff that's not going to be too correlated in some sense, or too dependent on each other so that it all lies in some hyperplane dimension less than 23. But say you just pick 20 of the standard basis vectors, you should be fine. So here's what we do. Let's call this one U1. This will be U2. This will be U3. And then I need more basis vectors. So just pick the standard basis vectors in R23. How about we pick the ones all the way up from number 4 to number 23? So, what are these? So remember, like, the fifth standard basis vector, what would that be? In R23, it would be the one where it's all zeros except at the fifth entry. Right? Okay. So this would be your starting basis, and what you're really interested in is the first three coordinates, right? Three vectors are really what makes things nice. Or what has meaning to you, right? Because you're trying to fit, say, a parabolic model to population growth here, right? And so then you put all of these into your big matrix, right? QR from the QR factorization, and then so Q will have your orthonormal basis. Now, this process that I've worked through with doing the conversion, it has the nice property when you build these orthonormal basis that. If you look at an initial part of your list, the span of, say, the first 10 vectors here will be equal to the span of the first 10 vectors here. In particular, what we care about is that the span of the first three vectors in our list will be equal to the span of the first three vectors in the new list. Okay. And so what you want to do now is you want to take the part of the population vector that lies in the parabolic time series hyperplane. That is, you want the part of the population vector that can be written as a combination of 1, y, and y squared. So the part of it that you can explain in terms of a constant multiple of just 1. So think of a constant time series plus a linear series with intercept 0 plus then a squaring series. So the part of the population growth that can be explained by a parabolic model. Okay? So you want to project this subspace V to get the part that you can explain by the model. And so remember how we do these projections? We just project onto each of the vectors in the orthonormal basis. Having just an orthogonal basis would actually be enough, but if you're using a calculator to get the QR decomposition, you'll get orthogonal and a little more orthonormal for free, so it won't hurt. Maybe I shouldn't use Q there. I'm already using Q for something else. So how about I want to use P for projection or something, but E. All right. Okay. S. Okay. So what do you get? You end up getting some numbers here. I'll call the numbers, that's just the coefficient you get by doing the dot product. One little benefit of having your calculator or computer get the QR factorization is that if these are orthonormal, here, because this dot product here in the denominator is just a 1 squared. So you actually don't have to do that dot product, because it's already been arranged that that one will be 1. Okay. So, so basically, in terms of the V coordinate system, you're just taking the first 3 coordinates of S. Okay. The coordinate vector of projection to the parabolic model of the population data series is just C1, C2, C3, and then 20 zeros. Okay. Because it's C1 times V1 plus C2 times V2 plus C3 times V3 plus 0 times V4 plus 0 times V5. Plus a bunch of other stuff until you get to 0 times D23. And then what happens next? Well, we want to go back to our original, right? We'd like to have the actual coefficients for this parabolic model, right? Okay, so then what we do is we apply R inverse. Our coordinate vector, and then that'll give us exactly what we need. Okay, so I guess I'll call these coefficients A1, A2, A3. And I claim that actually you'll get only the first 3 should be non-zero because of the fact that the span of these first 3 orthonormal vectors is the same as the first 3 vectors from our list. So that's how we go back to the original basis.
That's what we need.
And and so what that tells us is that so this is the coordinate vector for S. In the original U1, U2, all the way to the U23 basis, right? And of course, we only really care about the first three elements of the basis. Okay. So what this means for us is that S equals A1 times U1 plus A2 times U2 plus A3 times U3. So here are the coefficients for that parabolic change model. So this is how you can automate it using a QR factorization.
Population, of course, was the United States population.
Okay. So, questions or comments?
Yeah, to memorize a lot of the stuff is extended.
No, it's a longer process, right? There's a lot of different things going on here. Such and such in terms, like a constant term, linear term, quadratic term, and you give it the input times or whatever, and it automatically squares in whatever it needs to do. Then it builds, it extends your stuff to a basis for the whole thing. It does the QR dot decomposition, which we know how to do manually. It just automates that boring algorithm. That involve lots of projection, changing magnitudes.
And
it keeps track of the coefficients involved in making the change. And then the great thing about an orthonormal basis is that when you want to project to just certain coordinates, right, the coordinates of interest for your model, it's just as easy as taking dot products and you get all the coefficients. You throw away the other stuff as noise that your model can't explain. Although if the noise is really big, then you have a bad model. Or you have bad data.
Or both.
I guess one bit of technical debt from earlier board was why is the inverse of QR like this? Why isn't it Q inverse R inverse? Think about it in terms of actually you have a vector and then you change it, right? So I have some vector x, okay? I multiply it by q, and then and now I have qx. Or sorry,
yeah.
This is why it's so tricky, because you want to read it from left to right, but that's not actually the way the transformation goes. Okay, first we're going to apply r to it. Then we're going to apply Q to it. And that gives you QRX. If you want to undo that, what should you do? Well, first, apply Q inverse, right, to the left, right? Because you'll have Q inverse QRX, right? So that'll undo the Q, okay? Then apply R inverse. And your R, and you'll have this thing. Right? And then now it all cancels out. Right? So this will take you back to where you started. You have a present, and then you put the R wrapping around it, then you put the Q wrapping around it. To unwrap it, first you take off the Q wrapping, then you take off the R wrapping. That's, you know, that kind of thing. It's also true that if you take transposes of matrices, there's a similar phenomenon. The transpose of a product matrix is the product of the transposes, but the product happens in the other order. To explain why that's true, I think I would have to go into some stuff I don't have time for today. May or may not have time for it later in the semester. Okay. But you'll see this. If you have to do a bunch of matrices multiplied together, and there's lots of transposes or inverses in there, you'll see this kind of stuff. If you look in a linear algebra book, you know, and there's a proof involving Lotcher matrices, you'll see manipulations like these happening. So, consider yourself warned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little tricks like that.
Yeah. Everything gets trickier when the order of multiplication matters. Right? Let's see here. Here's an example of the order of matter. I say I'm pointing out this way, this is the x-axis, straight up is the z-axis. Okay? And I say, rotate 90 degrees about the z-axis. Okay, so what happens to the x-axis? It goes here. All right. Now I say, rotate 90 degrees about that old x-axis. So maybe I go up here. All right. On the other hand, what if I said, okay, rotate 90 degrees around the x-axis first. Okay, well, nothing happens here to my x-axis. And then I say, rotate 90 degrees around the z-axis. Well, now I end up here. So rotating 90 degrees around the z-axis, then 90 degrees around the x-axis, is different than rotating 90 degrees around the x-axis, then 90 degrees around the z-axis. And if you write down the matrices for those and multiply them, you'll see that the order matters for that, too.
You have 6 minutes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So all I can do right now is to give you some homework here. Okay. So one, you might have guessed this is coming. Involving the symmetric matrices. Okay. Let's do one in 3D here. So convert. Convert this to an orthonormal basis. Okay. And of course, if you want, you can use a QR factorization to speed up this process. Transformation of 3D space. It's going to be a scale change. Okay. So it's going to increase the first coordinate axis by a factor of 3. Right? So everything gets longer by that much in that direction. It gets longer by other factors in the other two directions. But this is going to be in the V1, V2, 3 basis. So both the input and output bases will be the ones you get from problem 2. Now what I want you to do is find the matrix of T for the standard basis. Back to the standard one. And I want you to then check some things, okay? I want you to check, one, that this matrix is a positive definite, okay? So check that V dot MV is greater than zero for five different V's not equal to zero. Maybe I shouldn't use V here, right? About W, right? Because I already used V1, V2, V3 to create confusion. But it's check that the matrix is positive definite. At least do a weak check. Check this. So you should be able to try anything except the zero vector. Right. Try five non-zero vectors and check that the angle between W and its transformed counterparts is less than 90 degrees by checking that dot product is positive. And then the last thing, M should not only be positive definite, it should also be symmetric. Okay, so you this should be an easy one to check. You should have that the transpose of M is just M again. Because this is a scale change, which is a special kind of sine scale change. No reflections, just positive scale changes in every coordinate. So it should be symmetric, like I stated at the beginning. Symmetric matrices are exactly the sine scale changes for some orthonormal basis. And that's probably enough work for one homework day. So I'll quit it. Okay. Any questions or comments? Week to figure this out. Come talk to me or send an email if you have questions.